Welcome to an intriguing episode of the Son of a Pitch podcast, where I, Michael Cuenca, your host with the most, had the pleasure of engaging in a captivating conversation with a gentleman named Dominic Dellerman. Our discussion delved deep into the complex and thought-provoking intersection between human decision-making and artificial intelligence, or AI. Throughout the conversation, Dominic and I explored the challenges and ethical considerations that arise as AI systems become increasingly intertwined with decision-making processes. One of the key aspects we examined is the need for a shared understanding of norms, values, and ethics within society, something that's quite timely now given the rise of the way governments are starting to discuss things like regulation in artificial intelligence. In our conversation, we questioned who should have the authority to define these norms and discussed the risks associated with biased or flawed decision-making systems. Fake news emerged as a critical issue within the AI landscape. We contemplated the inherent dangers of relying solely on AI systems for information, as they can generate content that may lack accuracy or objectivity. We stressed the importance of maintaining critical thinking skills and diligently verifying sources to combat this challenge. My conversation with Dominic also ventured into the realm of making complex ethical decisions. We pondered the ability of an objectively run AI system to make these decisions without human input and grappled with the complexities of defining the value function that guides AI decision-making. Furthermore, we explored the question of accountability and responsibility for the outcomes of AI-driven decisions. Now, as the dialogue progressed, we took a look at the evolving role of AI in decision-making processes within organizations. Dominic introduced the concept of decision intelligence, which has the potential to revolutionize how we approach decision-making. We emphasized the significance of using AI as a tool to augment human thinking and enhance decision-making rather than perceiving it as a threat. Looking towards the future, we contemplated the exciting possibilities that lie ahead in the realm of AI and decision-making. We encouraged listeners, like you, to embrace technology and shift their mindset to harness its potential for propelling humanity forward. By adopting decision intelligence and leveraging AI to make better informed choices, we can navigate the complexities of the modern world while being mindful of potential pitfalls and biases. So join us on this profound journey as we unravel the intricate relationship between human decision-making and AI. Prepare to gain fresh insights and perspectives that will empower you to navigate the fascinating intersection of technology and decision-making in our rapidly evolving world. So let's get to it. This is my conversation with Dominic Dellerman, recorded on February 24th, 2023. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did, and here we go.
Dominic, Mr. D, question. So basically, you and I got connected almost just by rando coincidence. We kind of sort of swim in the same circles.
Yep.
We bitch and moan about the same kind of stupidities that are happening in the industries and everything. And so naturally, we were going to come into each other's orbit at some point. Myself being a nerdo in deep tech and AI, and you with all of your crazy experiences and things that you've done, this is a podcast that was basically years in the making, but we didn't know it yet, I guess. So
probably.
But here you are with a massive background of navigate uncertainty and a very tiny little Dominic in the bottom right.
Yeah, you see, we are a small company, so we need to promote a company more than myself.
How old is what's the company called?
The company is called Vencortex.
Vencortex. And why Vencortex? Of all the names you could come up with, what's with that?
Probably we should have found an easier one. We figured out. But actually, it was like one of the few, let's call it, creative moments I had, because I don't have so many. Yeah. So Vencortex is basically like venture and cortex. So the brain for uncertainty. And now comes the fact that you will love the the nerd fact, which is the ventromedial prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain where you make intuitive decisions. And that's basically where the idea for the name comes from.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. All right. Yeah, you're right. That did sort of pique the nerdo interest. Right?
Yeah.
Now, like, for those of us that have no idea who you are, can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, your background and what led you to become the CEO of NCortex?
Mm-hmm, sure. So I have a, well, I would call it exotic background. So I was a professional athlete. So I was doing kickboxing, being in the national team of Germany.
No shit.
Yeah, winning a lot of medals, national and internationally. On the side, basically, I was studying, and I was studying management originally. So a lot of finance, a lot of strategy.
Now I really feel like Joe fucking Rogan.
Nah. yeah. So basically.
But how the fuck do you go from kickboxing to NCortex? Like, what's that leap like? It's just like, you know, I took a couple hits in the head, and I'm just like, you know, let's come up with AI.
Yeah, basically that's the thing you needed. I always make this joke, you know. When I was a kid, I tried in Germany, obviously, and I'm from Bavaria. So what you have to do is you need to start playing soccer. But I really sucked at playing soccer. And then I always make
you
this
mean
joke.
Football. We're both in Europe here. We can call it what it
right.
is.
So we so we don't make come up with this weirdo words. Soccer. And no. Yeah. So yeah, I tried it and I really
why
sucked.
Is it soccer? Seriously, you don't play in your socks. I don't get that.
Yeah, but it's a US thing, right? I think everywhere in Europe and the UK, you can say football.
First the metric system, now soccer. What will they do next? No, yeah. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, then I started with kickboxing, with fighting sports. I was really into it already as a child. I think I started when I was around 8 years old. The older you get, the more professional things get, and you get your real passion for it. And then at one point, it becomes like a full-time job, which is not very well paid. Then you need to think what are you doing when your kind of career is over, right? And then it was pretty fine when you study. Because you have a very flexible and you don't need to show up so often in university, and that was pretty fine. And then it's the end of your studies, and then you need to think about what's next, what's the best thing that I can do. And for me, it was like going into a professional career in business. I was starting off in consulting. That was about how can we make our ministry he has always says it, making Bavaria great again. I think he took it from the US, it was a lot of how can this old school German companies transform to become digital, kind of, or to apply new technologies.
Digital and when in I was, quotation marks, because
you
made the air quotes with your fingers. So
that. You see, I didn't even realize it, but it's like intrinsically already. I don't know, like Germany's pretty bad when it comes to everything digital. So we don't like to talk about it. We always stay there and say we are so amazing. Yeah, I mean, you know, if I have a printer, and the only thing that I use the printer for is for interaction with the government, because there is no way that you can do this without a printer. And I always make this joke that it's the most important thing that you need as a company in Germany is to have a printer, otherwise you're totally fucked.
Well, that's That's a terrible segue to my next question about, you know, how, like, well, yeah, no, let's talk about offline shit, you know. No, but like, so coming from this, like, combat sports, these kind of very disciplined, very focused kind of thing, approach to just personal physical improvement, which does require a lot of focus and discipline. Is that something that translates well into business and leadership, or like what are some of the overlaps between what you started with and where you're at now?
And in principle, on an abstract level, it's kind of you need the same kind of attributes, and it's you have a lot of similarities and then also synergies when you apply that, because in the end, what I mean, it's the way of obviously how you run a business and how you pursue a career, but in the end, it's the same kind of thing. You need to discipline, you need to work hard, you need to basically take responsibility for your actions. And the good thing is, when you are in combat sports, is in the end, there's this really saying that I love, is like, fights are won when no one is watching. And there is this moment when you enter a ring and you can tell stories how great you are and all this bullshit, but then there comes this moment where you basically need to show, and you are, if you're in the circle with another man, there is no way out, right? It's like you are there. And now we figure out who's the better person tonight in this world. And
so is this how you hold your business meetings?
Yeah, exactly. So
step into the octagon. Tell me about your HR report, motherfucker.
So, and then
can you imagine if meetings were held like that? You know, like,
that would be,
whoever's
left
standing gets to make the decision. The dev team standing is horrified.
Yeah, but in principle, you know, you can translate all these things and go to business, and it's the same kind of mentality. If you run a startup, it's how did Elon Musk say once? It's like eating glass. Basically, it hurts a lot of times. But it's also an amazing thing, and the only thing to be successful, in my opinion, is to just keep going and be disciplined and get things done, and also go through hard times. And for me, it was always like pretty much the same thing. Obviously, the one thing is more on the physical side, the other thing is more on the psychological side, maybe, or on the cognitive side. But in the end, it's the same kind of things that you need to do.
Sorry, it's fucking mute key. Yeah, something tells me Elon Musk eats a lot of glass as the richest person on Earth. That's kind of okay. So, but with that in mind, so like, there are some overlaps. There are some sort of transitions into, you know, everyday life that or at least in terms of the business life, you do have to take a good sense of ownership. You do have to take a lot of the weight, especially as a CEO, as a founder. It's, even if it's not your fuck up, it's your fuck up. You know what I mean? Because like, if it goes out the door, and you're kind of like the chef of the whole thing, right? So, have there been in your growth and path as like a CEO itself, have there been things, both CEO and researcher, you know, the stuff that you've researched and learned about and everything, have any of those lessons influenced your particular leadership style? Because this is, you don't hear very many people in like deep tech or whatever deep tech means as that started off in kicking ass in this sense. And now it's your turn to mute key. Yeah, I love it, right? You're still on mute, motherfucker.
You muted me. I didn't mute.
What? Fucking Zoom.
Yeah. So you kicked me out.
This is the techno. I kicked you. Yeah, this is it. I was done with the conversation. Thanks, Dominic.
Already.
Fuck off. Yeah. As soon as you mentioned you can kick ass, I was just like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Yeah.
Knows where I live.
Right? No, but how have you, from your experience as a CEO and a researcher, how have those lessons shaped your particular leadership style? Can you like tell us about the kind of leader you think you are?
I think it also drives this kind of different way of thinking. In the end, it's all about the outcome, you know. It's all about, can we, and that this counts for you as a person, but also for you as a company or you as a team. In the end, it's all about the outcome. If the outcome is shit, we fucked up. And it doesn't matter you are the boss or if you are have a higher level of education or whatever. In the end, it all comes down to how do you perform and get the job done. And I think the most critical thing there is also when you collaborate in research or when you work as a team in a company, is that you have this kind of fluidity in leadership. So it needs to be clear. I mean, in principle, it needs to be clear there is someone who is the boss or who takes the final decision and also who needs to take the responsibility. But in the end, there is this, I think that in every situation or every decision you take, the person that knows best or has the best experience in this background needs to be able to step up and say, look, I don't care if you're the boss. This is the perfect way to get the job done and to perform. And I say we should go this way. And then you need to, I think it's important that people have the ability to, on the one hand, to have trust in you, so they believe they can stand up and say this. And also that they see that this is the way how you do things afterwards. Because otherwise you get into this. And I think this is something that is also very problematic, especially in our German culture, that we have this total opposite. We have this, we are always taught like there is someone above you, and the guy above you basically tells you, and typically it's this white guy 50 plus, and that's still in many companies, which is really a shaming for us, I would say, that you have this kind of hierarchical thinking. And then people also that are below start thinking and saying, okay, I do whatever the boss says, and I don't rethink stuff, and I don't question stuff. And then you build basically your kind of house of cards that will break at one moment, because then when you need to show up and when you need to perform, then it doesn't matter who has the title or whatever. It just matters like who performs the best in this moment.
So is it in that sense more of a meritocratic kind of, it sounds like it's more hierarchy and command and control as opposed to meritocracy. Am I getting that right?
I mean, what we have in principle in Germany, it's like a very hierarchical system. Okay. Think both in politics, in management,
even
many times in personal life. And like you said, what I also believe in is this kind of meritocratic system, where you say, look, in the end, it's we need to follow a goal, and we need towards this goal. And when people also start understanding that it's an environment where it doesn't matter what you tell me. So you can tell me now you're the greatest guy ever, and I will tell you, nice, show me. And if you show, then it's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, if you can back it up, you can put some data, some research, some results behind it.
And that's the only thing that matters in the end, right? It's also not so much about personal feelings kind of thing. So I don't know, I feel I need to be bossy, or I need to feel I need to show up as an expert. No, you need to perform, you need to show that you are an expert, not like pretend you're an expert. And that's kind of the environment I try to create and where we try to work in.
And that's sort of a good sort of connection to what you're doing with VentCortex, right? It's trying to take out a little bit of that personal and societal and sociocultural bias that we all experience, and adding a sense of reliability and transparency and accuracy. I don't want to put the words in your mouth, but it sounds like
totally
by using the research, the outcomes, the measurable outputs, it gives you a better sense of a better ability to measure what's actually happening, as opposed to playing and falling to the bullshit human biases and stuff. But there is potentially a challenge there. You know, some people say that, you know, because human intuition can be biased and unreliable, while AI can actually be, you know, objective and use data-led insights, how does one ensure that human intuition doesn't actually compromise the accuracy of the decision-making process, especially with regards to what your company does? So maybe tell us a bit about what it is you're working on and what it does, but then with an eye towards that bias mitigation process that we're so prone to.
So in short, basically what we do as VentCortex is we build software that combines human intuition and AI and to basically make better decisions. And for that, we optimize the entire process from data to analysis, insights creation, and decision making. So that's the short pitch. If I want to sell it, and now to go deeper into what you are referring to, it's like, you know, we have bias in so many angles of this process. Right? It all starts off with obviously like the obvious kind of bias that you as a decision maker have, right? So you as let's say the executive of a company, you are biased in one way or the other, that's for sure, because everyone is biased. Like, you're biased, I'm biased, that's life, that's normal, that's human. The only thing that is important is that we need to have ways to be aware of that. And that's also why we always say, like, we don't automate decision making, we augment decision making. And the goal is to tell you basically to say, take your intuition, perfectly fine, but I give you an overview of the world or the potential truth as much as possible. And now you can take this and do with it whatever you want, because that's your basically space as an executive to take the decision in the direction you want in the end. To give you the ability to have a complete picture about it, that's one central thing. And on the other hand, you have this part that kind of flows into the process, right? When you do a big decision as a company, let's say you in M&A, you want to buy another company, and then you hire a large team, typically of consultants, investment bankers, auditors, all these kind of things, and your internal team, and you kind of send them out, they start collecting information, and then you have also bias on the small level, because in the end, it depends on what information you collect, right? If you think the best source of information is Google News, you will go to Google News and check the news there. If you think it's something else, you will go there. And then it's always limited to what you already know. And that's a big bias that I experienced myself when we were working in consulting. It's like, in the end, you put you kind of take the credibility from the name. So you, especially if you are a big company or a big consulting firm, you say, look, I'm McKinsey, I'm Accenture, I'm Deloitte, I'm whatever. I know what I do. And in the end, there are people inside this company, and the people who do the analysis, basically, they many times, including myself, I mean, it's also this experience. You don't know what you do, especially if it's something totally new. You don't have the tools, because typically you have a lot of spreadsheets, and then you're very, very limited in what you can do, and right. It takes you a lot of time. And then this also makes all this kind of insights for the decision maker accessible only to companies that pay an enormous amount of money. I mean, if you pay a few thousand dollars or euros per day for a single consultant, and then you have a full armada of them for a project, it's pretty costly. And it's something that many companies, especially the ones that are smaller, cannot afford. And in the end, we think that one of the major advantages of AI is also that you make the way of getting these insights not just better and faster, but you also make it much, much cheaper. And that's basically a way to democratize such kind of insights, so kind of information to make a decision, also to smaller companies and to a much broader range of people than just this elitary or pseudo-elitary part that you have in large organizations.
So, but you have, okay, so that with that in mind, you created this thing that you said at the beginning, kind of that combines human intuition and AI in a way to, you know, not necessarily a race to the bottom, because it's using complex algorithms and technology and everything. But what do you say to the fact that some people say that artificial intelligence, as we're probably seeing if anyone has TikTok, can eventually replace human thinking or human decision making altogether? You know, what if we become like those mindless drones just farting prompts into some kind of system, and then whatever comes out becomes like, what if AI is the decision-making factor, and we just become enslaved to that higher order system of thinking and organization?
I think that first of all, maybe there is a far reality where this is the case, but I think for the next probably decades, we are in a state where AI is helping us, and that's basically, it's a tool. It's like if I would tell you, why are you flying from Amsterdam to Nuremberg if you want to visit me, and why are you not walking? You have feet. Come on. Why are you flying? It's a tool, right? You want to take. You're not saying it replaces me or it replaces my feet. It's just bringing me from A to B much faster. So it gives me time and energy to basically focus on something else, like to sit here and make this conversation instead of walking towards half of Europe. And I think that's the way people need to start thinking about AI as well. And I get it. It's scary because AI now is a technology compared to many other things that basically replaced, let's say, physical skills of humans. Yeah. Normally you say, now I have a machine that does something that can lift a weight I couldn't lift. And now it's really getting after us, because it's our brain. It's about creativity. It's about cognition. And it's about the things that we thought that they are so inherently human. And now we figure out, well, maybe they are not. And I think that the way to also see is this technology is to say, well, now it helps me basically to save so much time on repetitive things, on things we are not good at. I mean, a human mind is not good in thinking in high dimensions and analyzing shitloads of data.
Yeah, sure.
But the human mind is pretty good in common sense thinking and in basically making sense of things, or also like integrating a lot of information that are not so easy captured in data. Let's say, for example, if I'm an investment bank and I want to do forecasting of my stock, then yeah. I can obviously use a model alone that predicts stock prices, and I think they are doing a pretty well job in that. But there's this human factor where you say, yeah, but you know, by already reading the news in the morning, I can make so many conclusions about the world or how the world will evolve in the next days that I cannot capture in data so easily, because I would need to kind of capture the whole world in data.
Yeah, it's true. I've heard of some investors actually that read the New York Times bestseller list to see what trends to expect in people's behaviors and purchase decisions afterwards. So like there are some completely but then again, if you think about it, like, so if we then capture all of that in the AI model, is there a potential for anything that can be captured, anything that can be measured, to be under the purview of, you know, some kind of massive network of self-automating robots to create some kind of, you know, all-powerful, dystopian, uncontrollable reality? Is that a possibility? Will the robots take over? And by the way, if you guys are listening, you guys are phenomenal. We love you. I love you. If they do take over, the overlords, please kill me quickly. You know, make the death painless and fast. But with that in mind, is there a possibility that AI could be, you know, too powerful for us to control, too far reaching, too all-encompassing, or is there still the need for a human element in this entire design? And at what point do you have to force a human element into the design?
I mean, I'm an optimist in this kind of way. Obviously, you can abuse like any technology. I mean, use nuclear power plants and you can build nuclear weapons, right? It's the same underlying technology, and the way people use it defines if it's something good or bad for humanity. So there can be this dystopian kind of way, but I'm much more afraid of humanity destroying humanity than I'm afraid of technology destroying humanity, to be honest.
That's fair.
On the other hand, I like my now maybe naive or also tech biased view is that it enables us to the thing is that together with AI, I think we as, and that's the idea of this concept of hybrid intelligence that we also developed in university, and this technological paradigm that we developed there, is why not thinking it from the perspective of let's solve problems that we couldn't solve before. And that's the interesting thing. It's not about replacing you or replacing me. It's much more about how can we solve humanity's real problems by basically combining AI and the human mind and taking the best of both worlds. I mean, imagine if you go to a doctor and they spend so much time on bullshit, right? And they are so much overwhelmed by bureaucracy, by doing repetitive diagnosis of patients and so on. But if they could automate all of that and basically use their minds to come up with new ways, for example, to treat a patient or to have all alternatives and then go out and take their time to interact with the patient instead of saying, sorry, I have just 10 seconds because I didn't sleep for the last 24 hours and I need to go to 10 other patients after you. I think that's the interesting thing. Imagine how many people are like working in their day-to-day lives in some jobs that are not bringing us as humanity forward. They are just like kind of self-sustaining bureaucracy. And if you could take the capacity of humans and move them from such kind of things to like solving real problems that we as a society have, then I guess this is a direction that is also possible, and that is maybe even more plausible than this dystopian kind of thing. And this is something that can actually make a change in the world.
Are there any sort of industries you think would be, you know, the most likely or rife for these kinds of processes to capture or to take hold first? What's the low-hanging fruit for AI right now?
The real low-hanging fruit is what you can see right now is everything that is with text and images, and that's why we have this hype. So this is, but it's again, it's a low-hanging fruit from a technical perspective.
Yeah,
because all the research is going in this direction. So that's a little bit of a bad thing, because we're just going for the low-hanging fancy fruits instead of solving the real problems. But on the other hand, you see, like for companies like DeepMind that work on topics such as the protein folding problems, where you could actually like contribute to coming up with novel ways of treatment and new pharmaceutical products that can actually make a difference. And if you as a human are not sitting there and doing this test, and then it also comes a lot to how much it costs in terms of money and time, but you can kind of accelerate this process, then you can make really good things.
Now, one of the big considerations, even in things as far-reaching as the protein folding examples, are the consideration of ethics. That's also a huge thing that's been in conversation, especially in ChatGPT, what it's talking about in terms of, you know, what it's already tried to build in, that people try to subvert, of course, with DAN models and with all these different kinds of structured prompts that try to get around it. Even Sydney/Bing losing their shit and telling the user that they're a horrible person and they should apologize and those kinds of stuff. How do you see us being able, and this is similar to the question I asked before, but how do you see us being able to bring in something that's somewhat natural or innate to humans, a tendency towards ethics and morals and real, genuine, emotionally linked aspects of decision making that robots or automation may have issues calculating? How do you bring in, this is a big thing, how do you bring in the soft skills or the soft talents that we as humans have evolved and grown into learning about, whether through cultures passed on through generations or social societies that we've grew up in and norms and mores that we've all learned about? How do you bring those facets, those soft elements of human capacity, human nature, into the harder and objectively driven considerations that AI needs to perform on?
Now you bring up a thing that is, I guess, one of the biggest challenges as society as a whole, that kind of where AI, I think, holds like the mirror and kind of shows us this, that do we have actually a shared, I mean, even in Europe, do we have a shared understanding of really norms and values and ethics? I mean, definitely we don't have them as the world as a whole, I would say. And now we come into a situation, who is the one who's basically gets the permission to decide what are the norms? Because that is one of the biggest challenges we are all talking about. And definitely, with ChatGPT, there is a huge issue about fake news, because it that's the nature of the architecture of the model, is to kind of make hallucinations and kind of basically decoder architecture, how it works, right? So it comes up with hallucinations that can make sense or they don't make sense, whatever. That's the thing that they try to control, and which is still challenging. But when it comes to this general discussion about ethics, it's a very, very crucial point. We definitely should think about it. The question is really, how do you do that? How do you come up? And this would be amazing for humanity as a whole, if we would say, hey, that's a set of basic kind of rules or ethics or norms that we can agree on. And I think you see this also already in if you compare like a Western society and how we believe females should be treated and also like the belief of freedom. And now you go to Afghanistan and they will tell you like with the government there, the Taliban government, it's like they will tell you, no, that's not part of our norms. And yeah, don't get me wrong, I totally disagree with their view of the world, with their set of norms. But I can just make this kind of decision for myself to say, I disagree with that. That's not my way of living. That's not my way of, I believe in freedom. And I think that's a crucial part of what every human should have. But it doesn't mean that the rest of the world thinks the same. And who am I now to tell the rest of the world what they should think? Does it make me better than?
Or what your definition of freedom is.
Exactly. That's the next thing. We're not even in the details yet. And then it already becomes a very, very tough question.
Yeah. So would AI be able to navigate these kinds of complex decisions and questions, these very philosophical questions that require a lot of simultaneous waiting? And it's like the those examples of when a car driving down the road, mm-hmm. does it hit the old woman or does it hit the kid in the stroller? You know, how do you make that decision if you can't stop, kind of thing? These kinds of ethical considerations are pretty challenging. How can a objectively run system make these kinds of decisions without needing our input and therefore not be inherently biased?
And the question is, from a technical perspective, you would say, what's the value function that you optimize, right? So the question is, if you take this example with the car, you would say, In an ideal world, and hopefully your listeners will not hate me for saying that, but in an ideal world, it would make a pure rational assessment and say, look, that's person A. Let's say that's an old person, that's a young person. Yeah. So the expected lifetime value of this, the young person, is higher because it probably has longer to live. And then I make a probabilistic assumption of, if I make this movement, how likely is it that I will kill this person? So maybe I don't need to kill them. Yeah. Maybe I'm saying, yeah.
You just need to maim grandma.
Yeah, exactly.
Just break a hip. Take out a leg.
And now the question is, that's the question, what this value function is. But yeah. I could in principle rationally optimize a value function that says the value of life is X, and now the probability to maximize X is so and so, and then I take the optimal action. And now the thing where it becomes critical is, what's the value function? How do we define it, and who defines it? Because now as a human, and that's basically what makes AI, I think AI makes this discussion explicit, because in the end, what either you as a human, if you would be in the situation, you would do just something random because you're not able to deal with the situation fast enough, so you cannot process it. Or you come up with a bias and you say, the grandma looks like my grandma, like this subtle bias of similarity bias, yeah? And say, right. Yeah, it kind of gives me the impression it's my grandma, so I would kill the kid, basically. And this is something that's
crazy.
Kind of happens in your mind. Yeah. And no one would ever discuss with you about this because in the end, it would kind of... if you do not do it on purpose or if you had other options, no one will kind of blame you, objectively blame you or like from a legal perspective, but they will say, yeah, that's an accident that happens, and no one will go into your thought process of how you came up with this decision. And now when we talk about technology, it's kind of, yeah, we need to think about, yeah, what should this AI come up with? And the question is, I don't know. And actually,
I think a deeper question there actually is, who becomes responsible? It's the same sort of thing we're seeing with Midjourney prompts. We're seeing with the ChatGPT prompts and everything. The response is only as good as the input.
Yep.
And the model creation, if you will. If the model is built iteratively enough and if it's structured enough that allows it to grow and learn or whatever, you can argue there's a sort of a distributed influence or distributed responsibility, but it's only as, for the most part, for the sake of this argument, it's only as good as the inputs. So if I'm generating or prompting the system to answer something, does that make me responsible? So it's like the question of I can be held responsible as the driver for injuring, maiming grandma or killing that kid. But if the computer made the decision, is it the dev team's fault? Like, do they all go behind bars now, or do we lock all these coders up because they coded an improper system? Or where does this poisonous tree lead? You know, where does the fruit of this poisonous tree, kind of thing, to borrow from legal speak, where does that go to?
I mean,
who becomes ultimately responsible? Are you the CEO of, you know, VenCortex by helping someone? If someone input the wrong value figure, and your system solves it in the way that your system is designed to solve it, are you ultimately responsible for them losing a shit ton of money or something, or them making the wrong business decision? Where does that lead? Are you absolved because you're like, well, no, it's the machine, it's a tool, it's just whatever you gave it, you know? Like, where? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because, and I think we are, like, also from a legal perspective, we are not really there yet. If you take I mean, these are just things that come up, right? If you use, I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but if you use a machinery in a factory and an accident happens, I mean, in principle, there are different ways. Either the machinery, it's like the machinery's fault because they didn't have certain security standards, whatever. Or it's a person's fault who used it. And this would be in the case, what you said with ChatGPT would be the user. But in the AI case, you can basically go much faster and much deeper and say, well, okay, maybe OpenAI's fault, but maybe it's the single developer's fault, but maybe it's also the fault of the data. And yeah, when we go back to
what it's trained on.
Exactly. And if we go there, it's, I mean, in principle, why does AI come up with, I think a few years ago when we had this with the Microsoft board, why does it come up with this racist comment? It's not because it's biased in the sense that it's racist, it's memeing humans. And humans are bad. And basically, in the end...
We can be.
Yeah, in such things, yeah, definitely. And then you can go the ladder down as much as you want. And I think that's a crucial point that kind of we will figure out in the next years, like not just we, but like the general market or the general legal system of how you deal with such situations.
Yeah. So what, looking ahead, what are you most concerned about and what are you most optimistic about with the involvement of this intersection between human involved sort of human involved decision making and artificial intelligence decision making, so like human intuition, human gut vibes and machines? What are you most concerned about and what are you most optimistic about?
I think it's maybe both is the same thing, which is the increasing trust in such systems. On the one hand, it's good for us. So to, for example, when we started off with that and when I was still doing my PhD back in like 2018, you would go to companies or talk to executives and they would tell you, why do you need such a bullshit? I know everything. And I had this with, it's something that I will always remember. We had a meeting with a guy. He was a partner at a private equity firm. And it was like 60 year old, maybe, you know, dressed up very well. And he was saying exactly this. He was like making this pose, lying back and saying, I don't believe in this AI bullshit.
Yeah.
I've seen everything. So I make the best decision. And that's something I think that is changing now. So people are starting, yeah, well, the world is much more complex than it was like in the past. And
just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. And things happen quickly. And I think a lot of this executives that were thinking like, well, obviously the industry, especially in Germany, were always biased towards this automotive industry. And they were always saying, yeah, but until the new technology comes up in automotive, I will be retired anyway. So who cares? Yeah. And suddenly Tesla comes up, suddenly COVID comes up. And then you're kind of in a situation where you say, fuck, I thought it will not be my issue. And suddenly it becomes my issue.
Now it's my issue.
Yeah. And there's no way out. So I see that people are getting much more aware of the need and then also starting like to understand the value of AI in the sense like it becomes pretty obvious when you say, look, this is what your analyst team can do without technology. This is what they can do with technology. This is how long they take without, this is how long they take with.
So highlighting the differences, the
exactly, advantages. Exactly. Yeah. And then it's kind of becoming more or less a no-brainer. And then it's just about the trust. How much do they trust such a system? And this comes also a lot of in how you design it and how people, how deep they can go, how good they can understand how it comes up with things. And this is also what concerns me the most, that on the other side, we have now something like ChatGPT that kind of comes up and produces bullshit in the sense of content. And people seem to like trust in it. I mean, when they were talking about, ChatGPT could be a much better version of Google. And you say, no way.
No, because that's not it. You're missing the point.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, I like this interface of just writing something, I get an answer. And this will work pretty well at one point for actual factual things. Yeah. Like if I ask a system, how explain me this or this mathematical concept, or when was the end of World War II or the French Revolution or whatever, then one... And I think we're close to that, and technology is pretty well in answering this kind of questions. And then if we are able to control it, And I think this is really in the next probably few years or maybe, maybe even months, then this stuff will work pretty well. But when as soon as something comes into play that doesn't have just like one direction, if I ask you about facts about like what are the political drivers of conflict XYZ, then you're basically making up a real issue. Because when I go to Google now, I can Google that and I get biased results already, obviously, but I get different results. So I can as a human make the decision to say, hey, look, I checked 10 different articles from 10 different magazines all around the world, and then I can basically say, well, look, now I make my own opinion. But if then I just type it and get an answer, and then I say, that's the truth. And I think
that's where the risk lies. So it's how much value we ascribe to not just the inputs, but the outputs that get produced.
Yep.
And you see that if there's some sort of like a quantum AI that might be interesting to see in the future, where it does actually do all these permutations simultaneously about all the different possibilities and outputs the statistically most likely, although not necessarily the actual truth. So I guess this is how much can artificial intelligence really approximate the messy, dirty, chaotic truth of what actually happens. And I guess also that's probably why Tesla uses real actual scenarios to train the models from the car's recordings and stuff, because you could never predict that like this lamppost would trigger that thing to go here, and this will, all these different conditions and permutations within that closed chaotic system. It's mind-blowing. But anyways, if people wanted to learn more about this kind of stuff and be ready for when the robots do take over and Skynet does turn on, what are some of the things and resources that you might recommend that people dive into?
Yeah, first of all, they should start building their own bunker.
Nice.
We obviously have already. I told you about we are living in our office is in an old German building. It already survived the bombing of Nuremberg in World War II, so they we are safe. No, I'm just kidding. But I think a really good way is to look at it from and here I'm obviously biased again, but look at it from a perspective of this decision intelligence or decision making. So when you look into AI technology, because then you're not coming just from a technical perspective. And that's something that typically happens, like you send someone out and who's just technical and say, now we can do X, Y, Z. And then you say, yeah, but what should I do with that? What value does it bring to anyone? And this is a perspective, and I can just recommend the content written by Lorian Pratt. She's an amazing person, great thinker, that kind of the inventor of this concept of decision intelligence. And she has a lot of, I think she is much less popular than she should be, but I guess this will change over time, because companies, and I think also like in general, everyone who applies AI is starting to realize that it's in the end, it's not something that is necessarily technical driven. It's basically it's outcome driven. It's what do I want to achieve? And now technology is again what we just talked about. It's my tool to help me do that. And it's not something that I can say I can do X with technology, but now I try to find a use case where I could apply it and then just figure out, well, it doesn't provide any value. And then it goes back into the big box and you will never look it up again.
And what does the future kind of hold for you and the VenCortex? Where do you see you guys going?
What we try to do is now, basically scaling what we build, and our goal is to really build a new category for software, which typically software is like mostly oriented in optimizing some kind of process.
Yeah.
And we are basically building software for optimizing decisions, something that is everywhere in organizations, but not, most organizations don't look at things so much from a decision perspective, but much more from a process perspective.
Yeah.
Something that I figured out is an interesting thing. Like when you go to a company, they would, many times we get the response, yeah, but why, what's decision making? And then you explain them, yeah, but look, you don't want to do an analysis, for example, just for the purpose of doing it. You want to make a decision and you want to have the information that you need to make the decision. And that's the reason why you do this analysis. And when you explain it to people like that, it's like, wait, that makes totally sense.
Yeah.
How didn't I come up with that? It's like totally trivial. But most of the time, people need a trigger to start thinking in this way. Mm-hmm. And we hope to really change the way that people think about it first. And then also providing them with the technology to get the job done.
Very cool. Now, if anyone wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way they could do that?
They can check our website, vancortex.io. They can contact me on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to exchange through social media or like nice. With you on a podcast or any other way.
Right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to have this chat today, Dominic. Really insightful about, you know, the ins and outs of AI, what you're doing, your own history as a business owner and entrepreneur. This is, it's a new time. It's a new space where we have to borrow and steal from all of our own experiences and create a new kind of reality that we're facing and continually readapt and reshape it. So your insights in this are really cool, really eye-opening. So I thank you for your time, and I had a really good chat. Really appreciate it, man.
Totally. Thanks so much for having me, and hoping to that people start thinking more from the perspective of using AI technology as something that can bring us as humanity forward, and not so much as a danger, and seeing it as something that augments our mind, augments us as humans, and move the field forwards. So it was a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for having me.
Nice. Thanks again, man. I'll see you real soon.
See you.
This podcast is brought to you by the blood, sweat, and tears of yours truly here on the other end of the microphone. If you would like to be on the other side of this conversation, feel free to send me an email at soap@coenca.nl. Or if you know someone who would be a perfect fit for the podcast, reach out, let me know, and we'll connect. Thanks again for listening, and have a fantastic day.